It continues to be a tough year for trees in Iowa. The polar vortex left its mark on many trees and shrubs, and now another county has been added to the list of those with emerald ash borer. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. An adult female emerald ash borer has been discovered in Iowa City. That puts Johnson County on the map and brings the total of infested Iowa counties to 10. Jeff Iles is professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. He's also a member of the Iowa EAB team. We'll talk about emerald ash borer and winter damage to trees and shrubs. And horticulturist Richard Giron will be here too. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, but before we get started, I do want to take just a moment to share an update about our summer membership drive. As you know, we wrapped it up this morning at 9 a.m., and the math has been at least mostly done. And what we know right now is that our goal was to raise $125,000 this week, and we exceeded that goal. We heard from 1,784 individuals and raised $133,000. So thank you so much if you were a part of that effort. Thank you also if you are a sustaining member of Iowa Public Radio. The future really does look very bright for Iowa Public Radio, and we thank you so much for listening, for valuing what you hear, and for investing in the future. Now, let's move on to Horticulture Day. In the news this morning, as you've heard, a 10th county has been added to the list of counties in Iowa where the emerald ash borer has been discovered. That county is Johnson County, and an adult female emerald ash borer was found in Iowa City. Jeff Iles is professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. He's also a member of the Iowa EAB team. And Jeff, thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be here, Charity. Thanks for having me.
And I know we weren't planning on spending our time talking about the emerald ash borer, but I have a feeling that we're going to have a lot more conversations like this over the coming years. Now, for an adult female emerald ash borer to be discovered without finding other damage from ash borers is a very unusual experience. So what does this mean?
It's like finding the proverbial needle in a haystack. I mean, it's very, very strange. And you have to tip your hat to the person that found this insect. They're not very big, so it's really a chance find. But you're right. To find the adult beetle without finding an infestation nearby is very strange. And so we're looking for that infestation. So We can't really declare Johnson County as an infested county, but we did find a beetle there. So it's a strange story.
I can imagine that this means that a lot of people will be looking at ash trees very closely.
Yeah, and looking on the ground and on picnic tables and on hoods of cars. But it is disturbing. This insect came out of the blue back in 2002, and it's marched its way westward. And we knew it would get here eventually. Now that it's here, we're kind of bracing for what's to come. You know, finding the insect is one thing, but then seeing the damage is another. We haven't really seen a whole lot of tree damage yet and tree death, and that will be the next shoe to fall, and that will be the more unpleasant part of the story.
Well, and when I look at the map of where the emerald ash borer has been discovered in Iowa, these 10 counties, we're not looking at a corner of the state. We're not looking at contiguous counties. What does that mean, that we keep finding the ash borer in these different places around the state?
Well, what we're seeing, even if you go back to Detroit in 2002 and look how the insect spread, it's not natural spread. It's not the insect moving around on its own. It's people moving it around and helping the insect spread via firewood distribution. So that's why we're seeing this hopscotch kind of discovery pattern. The insect has been helped. It's been aided in its distribution, probably by the movement of firewood. And so that's why we'll probably continue to find it haphazardly in the state and elsewhere as it moves westward and south and north.
Now, of course, Johnson County is one of our more populated counties in the state of Iowa. I'm sure a lot of people are scared. A lot of people have ash trees in their yards. What should we, if we live in Johnson County, be thinking about looking for right now? And what decisions do we need to make?
Yeah, it's a great question. And a lot of communities in Iowa have already begun the process of taking down, removing old ash or ash trees that aren't very thrifty, aren't very healthy. In preparation for the onslaught, I'm reluctant to tell people to just take out healthy ash trees. My take is that if you've got a good looking ash, then you leave it in place. You might make the decision to protect it, and there are some very effective insecticide treatments that can protect trees. They're most useful when they're used in a protective manner. But it's kind of a tree by tree, case by case basis. Now, if I'm a city manager, it's a tougher call. What do I do with 30% of my street tree population being ash? Do I protect them all? Well, I probably can't do that. It's too expensive. So I think we have to take the long view, remove trees that aren't looking very good, start planning on replacements, and maybe protect those that are of higher value. There might be some trees we just can't bear to part with, and so we decide to protect those. But far be it for me to tell people what to do with their money and their trees. I know if I've got an ash tree in my yard, I'm probably just going to watch it. And when the insects find it, then I'm going to take it down.
Now, you mentioned the insecticides that can be used as a preventative. A lot of people are concerned about the environmental impact of those insecticides. How much do we need to be thinking about that? How dangerous are those chemicals?
Well, I wouldn't call them dangerous, but of course any insecticide has the potential for killing non-target pests, and so we always worry about that. We worry about where these things eventually end up. So they're not no-risk products, but when used properly and when used by proper people that have been trained, then I think the risks are very, very small. That's why injecting chemicals into trees is often a better way to go if you're worried about collateral damage rather than just spraying them on the ground or spraying them in the air. I think when the proper insecticides are used at the proper time by individuals that have been trained, then I'm quite confident we aren't doing great damage to the environment.
All right. Now, most of us are not going to find an emerald ash borer, as the person in Iowa City did.
Yeah,
as you mentioned, they are very small insects.
Sure.
They are nice and green, so they're interesting to look at. But if we're looking at our ash trees and wondering about damage, what are the first signs that we will see?
Yeah, I'm looking for kind of a dieback in the canopy. So when you look at a tree, in a healthy tree, you normally see lots of leaves and a very full, thick canopy, depending on the species. But these trees that become infested with boring insects, and that could be native borers or the emerald ash borer, the canopies begin to thin out. And so you can see through the tree canopy, and you might even see some dieback, some branches and twigs in the top of the tree that are devoid of leaves. That's a warning sign. The problem is other things can cause that. In the winter, we were looking at woodpecker flucking. Woodpeckers will move the bark away and chip the bark away from trees and looking for the larval stage of the insect. And so that's another sign. And then sometimes trees will sprout along the main stem in an effort to grow leaves where they've lost them higher up in the tree canopy. But it's kind of a general decline and dieback of the tree that catches or captures your attention first. And then you begin to look for the D-shaped exit holes, which I make it sound easy to find, but they're not. They're not always easy to find.
All right. Before we move on from the emerald ash borer, one more question. We talked about how these 10 counties aren't all contiguous. However, it does seem to be there are a number of them on the eastern side of the state.
Right.
Do you think that the counties in between are probably infested as well?
I'm going to take a political answer here.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, if you take a fatalistic viewpoint, you might suspect that the insect is in far more counties than what we're finding now. But I have no idea because it is so random. Is it in Lyon County? I don't know. It could be. Is it in Ames? I'm looking at Ames. Why we've been spared? We have a lot of ash in Ames, but we haven't found it yet. So
okay.
Is it here? It's just such a hard insect to find. And in Detroit, they're guessing now that the insect was probably there many, many years before 2002, the year that it was finally discovered.
All right. So we're not done talking about this by a long shot. This is
well, it's great to be on the EAB team. In fact, we have T-shirts that are available in the lobby.
Oh, do you? Good.
I don't want to horn in on your fundraising, but
right.
we're selling T-shirts. Wouldn't you like to have one of those?
Oh, I hope it's nice and bright green.
EAB. It sounds like something from the 70s.
Right.
EAB team.
Well, you should have a badge as well.
Yeah.
So we don't have a lot of time to talk about winter damage, although on this show, we've been talking a lot about winter damage of trees and shrubs over the last few weeks. A lot of people are looking at their trees and shrubs and saying, hey, it looks really brown. From your perspective, Jeff, how much damage has there been from the polar vortex?
Well, you know, these kinds of events are fun for plant scientists, for horticulturists. In fact, a true horticulturist is a person. Well, if you've never killed something, you're not a true horticulturist in your yard. I'm talking about a plant, not animals or people. But we're seeing a lot of weird things that we can't really explain except to blame it on winter. But it's not just winter. We went into winter in a very dry state last fall. So you combine, you know, a little bit of drought stress, some cold temperatures, and especially cold soil temperatures. It's one of those factors we haven't talked a lot about. But without snow cover and with dry soils, we had some very, very low soil temperatures that probably contributed to some of the plant death we've seen this spring, especially some of our ornamental grasses, which really surprised me. So.
Well, and Richard has been answering a lot of these questions over the past few weeks, people wondering, when do I give up on a plant or a shrub that is brown? You know, we've talked about looking for signs of life. How close are we to that point where we say, uh-oh, we got to do something?
Well, I guess it depends on your level of patience. I'm not a very patient person. So if I've got a tree that looks still pretty threadbare this time of the year, I don't know. I mean, you could hold out hope, but I'd be more inclined to replace it. The thing is, with all the root damage and some of the damage to the tree's pipeline, many trees have just enough energy to leaf out and produce very small leaves, but that plant will be under stress all summer. And maybe going into winter, it will be stressed, and maybe it just gives up the ghost next spring. So, I don't know.
That's a very pessimistic outlook. We have had almost a perfect spring.
We have, and so that I guess you've made my point for me. We've had great conditions. If the tree hasn't gotten its act together by now, come on. I don't know. But if it's a tree your great granddaughter gave you and you want to nurse it along, that's fine too. The thing is, I've been surprised before. There were some trees a month ago that I thought were stone cold dead and have amazingly come out of it. So I would think by the end of this month, let's put a calendar date on it, Charity.
Okay.
By June 30. If that plant still doesn't have any leaves, then get out the chipper. Now, right. You know, luck would have it that July 1st, it'll probably get it in gear. But,
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me this hour is Jeff Iles. He is chair and professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Coming up in just a moment, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here. And of course, they will be answering your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, Jeff Iles, who is professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And before we get to questions at 866-780-9100, you can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I want to ask one more question about winter kill, and that is, okay, a lot of us have brown damage on our trees or shrubs from the winter, and a lot of those trees and shrubs are coming back. What do you do about all that brown stuff without stressing out the plant even more?
Right. So if you have dead twigs on your trees or shrubs or brown on your conifers, I think by this point you can safely trim those areas back to live or green tissue. and make the plant look better. That's a simple thing to do, and that would be an appropriate thing to do right now.
Okay, my ewes are ugly, but they're clearly alive, so it's good to have permission to go out and make them look a little bit better, at least.
This weekend, yes.
Okay, that's on my schedule now. Let's get to the phones. Patty is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Hi, this is my third year for asparagus, and last year it came up, it's kind of scraggly, and this year there's just zero, dead, no, nothing. And the tulips, I got two or three tulips for the first year. I planted them in October, bulbs, and I planted a dozen or more daffodil bulbs, and none of those came up. So are they goners? The same with my asparagus, and what can I do with this dead, empty ground now? Can I plant something over it? Do I have to dig up the bulbs, or...
Okay.
Well, if the asparagus didn't come up at all, it's basically dead. And as far as the cause, again, it might be the very cold soil temperatures possibly that killed it. As far as tulips and daffodils, if they didn't come up, they're gone too. I'm not sure what destroyed them, but they're gone, so I would replant this fall.
All right. And it could have been something like a squirrel eating the bulbs, right?
I mean, it's possible, but you wouldn't think they would get them all. So I'm not sure exactly what destroyed the actual bulbs.
Okay, so try again. Patty, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Don in Burlington. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I've got a beautiful yellow poplar out in my backyard here. It's about 90 foot tall, and it's a big tree. 2 years ago, one of the branches on the north side was just not coming, didn't really leaf out well, and now about a third to... maybe almost half the tree is that way. All on the north side, it seems. But I'm wondering, is this thing a goner? You know, it's been around a while, obviously.
So, yeah, Don, this tree is, what, 60 years old or older?
I really don't know, but it is. It's pushing 80 to 90 foot tall, yeah.
Wow, that's
as straight as can be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of our most beautiful native plants. And of course, you're down in the banana belt down there, and you have much better luck growing plants like yellow poplar or tulip tree than we do up here. Fantastic plant. And, yeah, I've always been impressed by the straightness of the trunk. You know, I don't know particularly how your winter went. I'm assuming yours was challenging, perhaps not as challenging as we had up here in the Northland. But I don't know what else to tell you. Tulip poplar don't have a lot of problems, but low temperature and remember those low soil temperatures might have had something to do with the dieback you're seeing. There really isn't any rescue treatment. I mean, you can trim off the dead. Obviously, you shouldn't do that. That would be done by a trained arborist. But fertilization, it would be of minor benefit.
I was going to ask about that because my soil here is all river sand with just a little bit of topsoil on top.
But how does the remaining foliage look? Is it showing any signs of deficiency? Is it yellow?
I would say, you know, most of the leaves are in the neighborhood of about a 50-cent piece, where usually they're about dinner plate size.
Yeah. Again, I don't think the problem, although your soils could be lacking a little bit of nitrogen, I don't think that's why you're seeing the smaller leaves and the dieback in the canopy. You know, on a tree that big, it's kind of almost futile to try to water and fertilize it anyway. I mean, it's just such a big plant, and it's figured life out by now on its own. What it hasn't figured out is the Iowa weather. So I don't know what to tell you. That there isn't any magic. Be patient. You know, we've given you that June 30 date, Don. So call us back. Call Richard back. I won't be here, but call Richard back and send me. You know, I always like to see pictures. If you ever get a chance to send a picture, that'd be kind of fun.
I have some and. Actually, I emailed a couple of pictures to you a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
To the station.
Mm. Oh, okay. Well, if you send them to me, just send them to my name, Iles@iastate.edu. We can chat privately.
All right.
Sounds good.
Don, thanks
a
lot.
You bet.
Thank you very much for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Lori. Is it too late to weed and feed? I did it in the front yard early spring and had amazing results. I'd like to do the back now and maybe even do the front again.
Okay. Well, as far as a weed and feed product, It's too late for a pre-emergent herbicide in the yard.
Things have emerged.
They have emerged. Crabgrass would have emerged by now. So that would not be effective, but you could put on a broadleaf herbicide fertilizer combination in the fall.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Here's Chris in Panora. Hi, Chris.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I've got a weeping willow tree in my front yard, and this year, for the first time, I've got some white cottony-type sprouts coming off of it. I've never had that before. I was just curious what it is and what could cause that.
So Chris, where are these sprouts arising from? What part of the tree?
Oh, they're on the leaves. They're almost like a seed pod or something. They're kind of, you know.
Yeah.
If you didn't know better, it's kind of like a cottonwood when it busts up.
Yeah, okay. Well, the tree has reached that magical age where it's now reproducing, doing its thing. So it's probably some part of the flower or the seed, as you described. Trees don't do that when they're young. It takes a while before they mature. So I would guess it's some part of the reproductive process. One of the drawbacks of willows and those kinds of plants in your yard is they're not the cleanest of trees.
Yes, I know.
So hopefully you've got a big front yard.
Yeah, it's big enough.
Yeah.
Well, thank you much.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for your call. And let's get back to emails and more sad news about trees. This one's from Ryan in Reasoner. Is there a borer that affects black walnuts? I've had a dozen trees die in the past 4 years. The canopies tend to die back. Woodpeckers really work the tree over, and within a year, they're dead. These trees were likely to be 10 to 20 years of age, but seem to have been stressed from several wet years followed by the drought.
Hmm. Well, I don't. That's probably a better question for Dr. Lewis. We should probably have him back in one of these days. But I don't know about borers, but there's all kinds of environmental factors that can wear a tree down. It could be a combination of drought. These trees do like a well-drained soil, and if that's not the case, we can have problems. I guess I would encourage Ryan to give Dr. Lewis a call. And again, we have really relied more on electronic photos over the past 10 or 15 years to help tell the story. And so I'm going to ask for more information on this one.
What about a thousand cankers disease? And I know that black walnuts have been struggling with that.
Yeah, and I don't know how prevalent that is in the state yet. I think it's fairly...
Another thing that may be coming.
Yeah, it's coming. But I guess you can't rule it out, but that's the reason why we need to ask a few more questions.
All right. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Jeff Isles, and Richard Geron, and they are here to answer your questions. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tom is on the line next from Shoeyville. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So as it turns out, I've got some construction going on in my home this week, and we've tried to keep the heavy equipment away from the trees, but there's two or three places where we couldn't stay out of the drip line. I'm wondering, is there anything I can do as far as mitigating the damage from soil compression to avoid these trees getting stressed?
Yeah, good question, Tom. So the construction has been completed?
Well, it's going to be completed. The heavy equipment's going away today.
Okay. So describe what's happened under the drip line of the affected trees.
Well, there's so I've got a pretty nice large spruce where I've got it probably about a foot under the drip line where there's about an 8-inch rut. I've also got a couple of nice oaks where there aren't any ruts. We've just been parking things there, and I know there's been some compression.
Yeah. The good news, I hope the good news, is that the damage is only like on one side of the tree. Is that a fair statement?
Correct. It's
okay.
On, one edge or
right.
Probably less than 100 degrees circumference around the tree.
So the majority of the percentage of the root system has been unaffected, and that's a good thing, especially with the oaks. As far as the areas that have been affected, it's always dicey to go back in there and try to till up the soil or loosen it because you might even do further damage to the root system. So I'm a big fan of simply using an organic mulch over those affected areas. So instead of trying to regrow turf grass, I would use some kind of an organic mulch under the drip line, and make sure I'm getting enough water to those plants when conditions become stressful, and leave it at.
Well, I don't care about grass. I mean, that in the long run, grass can always be replaced.
Sure.
So forget the grass. I mean, I'll do whatever I need to do within, you know, within some reason to try and just reduce the stress.
Well, and that's why I'm recommending the use of an organic mulch. I think a lot of people would say, well, go in there and try to till up the soil or drag it or do something to alleviate that compaction. That's awfully hard to do. And also you're going to cause further damage to the root system. So if you're worried about evening the soil out, you could bring in a little bit of soil to do that. But I think an organic mulch is your best ground cover. And then I'm going to try to alleviate any stress. And in Iowa in the summertime, that usually is drought stress. Fertilization, I'm not real keen on that to mitigate construction damage. Again, the only valid reason to fertilize would be if you can demonstrate a nutrient deficiency. So you could take a soil test, but I think watering and mulching and then trimming off dead branches if they occur. But the tree will tell you what branches to remove. Some people will go in and do some thinning proactively. I think that's a bad plan. Let the tree tell you which branches it's going to jettison, because the tree might lose a branch or two in response to root damage. But I'd wait and let the tree tell me which one to take off.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for your call. And here's an email question that would be better for an entomologist, but I'll give you guys a shot at it. This is from Jill in Hills. I recently read that butterfly bushes are not good food for bees and butterflies because they're not native and are actually harmful. Is there any truth to that?
Well, they're not native. They're basically a woody shrub, and they typically die back to the ground. I will say the butterflies do love the actual flowers when they bloom, so there is some benefit there.
All right. And here's another email. This is from Katie. I'm growing giant dahlia, flowered zinnias, and rocket snapdragons for my October 11th wedding in northeastern Iowa. Do you have any tips you can give me to be sure they're still flowering during that time?
Ooh. Cross your fingers because there might be a
frost. Move up the wedding? No, just kidding.
Because there might be a frost or freeze.
She could protect them if she's...
Right. She could maybe protect them with maybe a blanket or a sheet. What I would do, I would deadhead them where when the flowers are done, basically when they turn brown, remove them. And that will encourage them to keep on blooming because their aim in life is to flower and produce seed. And so if you prevent that, if you pinch them back, they keep on flowering. So,
all right. Sounds cruel when you put
No, not at all.
If you thwart their aim in life, they will continue to do what you want.
Right.
All right. Good luck with that, Katie.
That's good.
And congratulations. Bill is on the line next in Indianola. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I left a message for Richard. His voicemail. I have a flowering crab in the back that really has never really taken off. In fact, the upper part of the tree is dead. But there is growth coming out of the trunk about 6 inches above the ground. And I hate to destroy the tree if it's savable. Part of the problem is that it's planted in the dark clay, and I think sometimes trees have a hard time getting a good start in that stuff. Can I cut off the dead part and see if they can get growth?
Well, boy, it's possible, but I think I'd be inclined to remove it. I say that because it's so badly damaged or it's mostly dead. I would be inclined to remove it. And when you replant, make sure you don't plant too deeply. That's imperative in a clay soil. So when you plant that, the upper one third of that soil ball should be above the surrounding terrain, so it's fairly high. If you wanted to, you could try to salvage it. And I guess I would just Cut it back to just above where the sprouts are coming out. Okay. And let those sprouts grow. And then early next spring, go out there and look at the various sprouts that you have on the trunk. And then select what you think is the best one. Keep that one and prune off the rest and have that develop into the trunk, the new trunk of the tree. So you could do that. But it's not a guarantee, so that's why I'm inclined to replace the tree, unfortunately.
All right, Bill.
It's a launching plan for pad for birds, because the bird feeder is about 10 feet away, and they set up on the branches.
Okay.
And, but thanks for your help. Appreciate it.
All right, Bill. Thank you very much. And here's an email from Kathy in Ames. I'm starting to get holes in some of my hostas. I've never had slug problems. What could that be, and what can I do to stop it?
Well, it very well could be slugs. They're fairly common. We've had a kind of a wet spring, so it's a possibility. I guess I would confirm that. Go outside at night sometime with a flashlight and check. There are slug baits that you can use. You could use those, and they will control the population somewhat.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. And also with us now is Sandra in Independence. Hello, Sandra.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
We have a Dawn redwood tree that's about 8 years old and about two stories high, but slim kind of tree. And this year, when the needles came out, the ones on the lower third of the tree look mostly normal, but some dead looking. And at the very top of the tree, the little bitty branches have nothing on them. And in between, it looks pretty dead, but slightly green. And I wondered if we have any options, or if it's just a goner.
Yeah. Well, I was going to congratulate you, and I still will, Sandra, on growing Dawn redwood in Independence. That's quite a feat in and of itself. That is a tree that is a strong zone 5 plant, meaning that it doesn't really like temperatures much lower than minus 15, and you certainly had that this past winter. So what you're seeing is classic winter dieback. And remember that June 30 deadline that we're using this morning. I guess I'd hold off a little bit longer, but if the twigs and the parts of the tree that you're seeing brown, if those are brittle, you can probably trim those back. But my hunch is that you're going to have some pruning to do on this plant, and you might have to watch it regrow. That would not be surprising to me, knowing the species and knowing where you live. So, you're going to have to prune off the dead, allow the green tissue to grow, and hopefully you might have to even reestablish a new leader, depending on the degree of dieback on that main stem. Does that make any sense?
Yes, I think so. But the main stem itself looks good.
Okay.
But we may need to get rid of it in order to have healthier branches going up.
Well, You'll know more again in a few weeks. It might even take a month to know exactly what's living and what isn't. But if the main stem is still viable, still producing tissue, that's a good thing. It sounds to me like you've experienced some dieback from the tip, so you might have to trim back that main stem back to live tissue.
All right, Sandra. Good luck with that. Next, let's go to Kevin in Illinois City. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, Charity.
Hi.
2 years ago, it was 2012, I planted asparagus in my backyard, and we planted two different types of plant. We planted the ferns, and then we also planted bulbs. Now, the ferns, I have one that is still living and showing any sign of life, so I assume that that was the hard winter that killed most of them off. But the bulbs, they're sending up shoots, but they're smaller than the size of a pencil.
Okay.
Very seldom do we get anything that's big enough to actually eat.
Okay.
Am I expecting too much too soon from my asparagus plants, or was it just the winter that's doing this to me?
Well, winter may be a factor there. Obviously, if the spears are small, it's not very healthy. And so I would do everything that I could to promote plant vigor. So I would control weeds. I would maybe fertilize, put on a fertilizer like a 10-10-10. I would irrigate if we have an extremely dry summer. I would do everything that would encourage plant vigor. And next year, if they come up real small again, I would skip harvesting anything next year. Just let them leaf out and let them basically manufacture food and get stronger over time.
I was going to ask how, what time of year should I allow the plant to go to fern, go to seed? Should I do that now and just leave what's in the ground there and just let it build, like say, strength?
Normally, if we have a healthy stand, we harvest until about mid-June. Then we stop harvesting and let it go into growth, okay? But if it comes up very, very spindly next spring, early, I would not harvest anything for a full year. Just let it sit and produce foliage and get stronger, and then hopefully the following year you can harvest some spears.
Fantastic. I appreciate your help.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Kim in Iowa City. Hi, Kim.
Hello. I'm planning to grow some pawpaw trees, and I'm a little confused about it. I know you need two for pollination. I wonder if you could suggest some varieties, and I've also run across some that have said that they were grafted pawpaws, I'm curious about your opinion on pawpaws, please.
Well, you can buy seedlings, and if you plant seedlings, plant just two trees. You have to have at least two different trees. If they're seedlings, they'll be a little bit different genetically, and that's okay. So if you buy seedling-grown plants, plant at least two. As far as varieties, there are some varieties, and they're typically produced by grafting. I think one is Shenandoah is a variety, I believe. There are two or three other varieties that are pretty hardy in Iowa. But if you plant a variety, you have to definitely have two different varieties of the pawpaw.
Do they? How fast do they grow?
I would probably describe it as slow to medium.
Okay.
But definitely not fast.
Okay, very good then. That helps. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Kim, thanks a lot for your call. And next, let's go to Eileen in Urbandale. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a question on a bush that we've lived in this home for 12 years, and it's always been there. And we call it a snowball bush. I don't know if it's a viburnum. Somebody has called it that. But gorgeous. Every year, blooms beautifully. We've thinned it, pruned it, everything. After this last winter, and I'm hoping it was because of the winter, the center of it, it has little buds all over it, little brown buds, like it was just getting ready to bloom, and did nothing. But the two outsides of the bush were gorgeous and full and leafy and beautiful flowers again this spring. Do I just let it go for the season and let it do what it wants to do, or is there something I should be doing to it?
Yes.
Would you
like to expand on that a little bit, Jeff?
Eileen, so I'm guessing this is a snowball viburnum, which is kind of the old-fashioned viburnum. They have the flowers aren't real big, but they look like small little globes, and it's a very attractive plant, an old-fashioned plant. But what you're describing is another one of those maddening after effects of the past winter. Sometimes plants die down from the top. Sometimes they thin out from the interior. That sounds like what yours is doing. There's really nothing you can do. I mean, you can go in there and trim off little dead twigs that might make the plant look a little bit better. But there's very little you can do to fix the problem. The plant will recover. These are very tough plants. I'm surprised to hear about winter damage on Snowball Viburnum, but I'm sure it'll recover in time. You could fertilize it. You will water it this summer when conditions become stressful, but there really is no magic cure or recovery cure for the plant.
Okay, well, that's good to know. We have it in an area, it's right off of our patio, and so the area that the bush is in, we have racked it in. There's real good soil under there, but yeah. We have racked it in. That wouldn't do anything, would it? Because we've had it like that forever.
Yeah, those are pretty resilient plants. I keep coming back to how plants went into winter last fall. It was dry, it was warm. Mm-hmm. And so the rock conditions maybe didn't do it any favors. Were you watering it at all as it went into fall and winter?
Well, we did, but I would venture to guess probably not as often as we should have been. It's just kind of always been a beautiful thing, and we've never really had to do a whole lot to it.
Sure, so. And you would expect that. The plant was firmly established. You wouldn't expect to have had to have babied it, but we came through, you know, think back to 2012. It's been pretty dry,
even
that far back. So remember, plants have long memories, and sometimes these stresses accumulate, and then we wonder what happened during the spring of 2014. Well, there's a number of factors that were in play here.
All right. Eileen, thank you so much for your call. And next, we've got Michael on the line. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, real fine. My question surrounds a cottonwood tree. Every June, it starts snowing at my home, and I have nothing but white covering all my grass. And the question is, how flammable is that cotton?
Flammable.
Is it a fire hazard?
Is it a fire hazard?
I can't imagine. What are you doing out there?
Well, I'll tell you just like this. My nephew, as smart as what he is at 14 years old, come by this weekend with his mother and decided he was going to just light up a little puffball. And it carried like a wick everywhere because I have so many cotton balls that it just went everywhere, started going behind the garage, and it was like a wick just taking off. And like my neighbor's lot next to me, I mean, it is just saturated with nothing but cotton balls right now, right? So that's why I was wondering, you know, what can I do to more or less prevent this from happening? And the only thing I can come up with is when I feel like I got a layer and, you know, like somebody might just start a fire and burn the leaves, for instance, right?
Right.
And if something comes over into any one of these four house areas where all my cotton balls carry off to, we could have a big old fire just going from one bush to another, to the house, to the different parts of the grass.
Wow. So does your nephew live close?
No, he doesn't live close, thank God. I'm with you on that. I already took care of that.
All right. That's where I was going first. Secondly, you could have have him rake whenever he comes over, but
you got that right.
This is a good question. I've never really thought about the flammability of the cotton. I guess any plant tissue could burn if it gets dry enough, but
is the fluff that comes from cottonwood trees, is that similar to cotton? I mean, cotton is extraordinarily flammable.
Well, we probably shouldn't call it cotton. It's dried enough. I mean, it could catch on fire. It could be ignited. I guess if you're really risk averse, I would go out and rake it from time to time or mow over it. But I think it's a long shot that you would have a huge fire problem because of this. The reproductive structures coming off these cottonwood trees. Boy, there's enough things to worry about, Michael. I guess I'd worry about something else.
Okay.
Easy for me to say. I don't have. I'd be more worried about the darn tree and how big it is
and the nephew.
What else it drops. Yeah, and your nephew.
All right, Michael. Thank you very much for your call. Kenny's on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Kenny.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Okay. We've got three oak trees that we brought from my son's place down in Texas as seedlings. So right now they're about 10, 12 foot high. And one of them, or two of them, have come back real beautiful this spring. And one of them, it looks like most of it has died off. There's some branches that's got green on them. I started trimming it back yesterday, and I noticed that some of the branches that I trim back, I quit because some of them look like they had pretty good life in them. Is this tree, do you think this tree's going to come back this year, or you think it's going to die out?
Kenny, do you know what kind of oaks these are?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Well, they're from Texas, and they probably didn't really enjoy our winter last year.
Well, that's what I'm kind of wondering.
Yeah, it's hard to say what they are. You can grow a lot of different kinds of oaks all over the world, and the ones that grow in Texas you might not find up here. So my guess is we're looking at winter injury again, and I'm surprised you had two out of three that made it through pretty well. The third one, who knows? It might have been a weaker one. You might hold off on any more pruning, see what happens. I mean, it's kind of an experiment what you have going there, so you might wait until, you know, the fall to determine what's going on. But,
and don't we hear often not to touch oak trees during the summertime?
Well, there you go. That's a good point, Charity. So we do worry about oak wilt also, but without knowing what species of oak we're dealing with here, I don't know. But you're right. To be safe, Kenny, you might just put a moratorium on any more pruning until the dormant season because of the specter of oak wilt.
Okay. Kenny, thanks a lot for your call. Phyllis is on the line in Washington. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I'm wondering, this is the first time I've planted turnips and beets, and it seems like they're growing mostly to tops. Is there something I should have done or not done?
Well, it's important to thin them. So,
I did that.
Okay, if you've done that, that's about all you can do. Sometimes if you fertilize in the spring and you apply fairly large amounts of nitrogen, that can result in a lot of foliage and no root. So that's the other thing that I kind of worry about, basically thinning and too much nitrogen.
Okay. I did not put any fertilizer on, but last fall we tilled in gobs of leaves and maybe a little grass. Would that have made too much nitrogen?
I wouldn't think so. The grass definitely does contain nitrogen, the leaves not too much. So that's kind of a balance there. So I wouldn't think so.
Okay. I guess maybe I'll just wait and see then if anything forms. My radishes have done the same thing other years.
All right, Phyllis, thanks
a
lot.
Thank
you. Yep, thanks a lot for your call. Last call of the day, Tom on the line in Fort Dodge. Hi, Tom.
Hi. We have a problem here at the house. We have a hedge of yellow twig dogwood, and yesterday, for whatever reason, it was cut back, and I don't mean trimmed. I mean severely chopped. And my suggestion was not to ever do it again until the plant's dormant. Or does it matter at all?
Yellow twig dogwood's a pretty tough character, Tom. So you can, my preference would be to do it in the late dormant season. So sometime in February or March, I think that's ideal.
Uh-huh.
But you can get away with it now and the plant will probably recover quite well.
Okay, well, hey, thank you. Well, thanks again.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Tom. And final question of the day is from email. This is from Sue in Urbandale. I have an area under my clothesline in between the neighbor's drive and my house. I'd like a barefoot-friendly ground cover to retain soil and not need mowing. I think a lot of us would like that. Any ideas, Richard?
Boy, that's tough.
That's a dream,
isn't
it? It
doesn't need mowing. And you can walk on it.
Yep. Without shoes.
Ground ivy.
What about some of these tines?
Kind of bumpy.
Well, but you can walk on it.
Yeah.
And it spreads.
How about cotton from cottonwood trees?
All right. Well, thank you.
I don't know.
Yeah, thank you both so much for being here today. Jeff Iles, who is professor and chair of the horticulture department at Iowa State University. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
And Richard Duran, ISU Extension horticulturist. We have just a couple seconds left, but Ben Stanton is here. You are hosting News Buzz at noon on River to River. What's coming up on the show?
Yeah, that's right, Charity. We are talking a bit about sports the first half. The World Cup is underway. The Iowa Senior Games are underway. And a professional basketball game will be played in Iowa this fall for the first time in 17 years.
Wow. All right. News Buzz coming up at noon here on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.